from here to there. We cannot go unless we change and start to grow. Welcome to Lead, Sell, Grow, a show that helps you amplify your leadership, grow your sales, and take your life to the next level, all while being human. Here are your hosts, Eric Konovalov and Harry Speight.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Lead, Sell, Grow, the Human Experience Podcast. Everybody, thank you so much for being here. All you Latvians out there that are listening to the show, everybody in Australia, all two of you who are listening to this show, we're seeing the stats and we're growing in Europe. So it's really cool, even though I know Australia is not in Europe. Hey, we got a great show for you guys. Super energetic. You're going to learn a lot. But before I let Harry introduce our guest, I got to tell you guys, come join our community on Facebook. It's called Lead, Sell, Grow, the Human Experience Tribe. We made it a tribe just by calling it a tribe. Now it's a tribe. So you want to be a part of the tribe. That's what they tell us. People want to be part of tribes. So get your ass into our tribe on Facebook so we can have some good conversations with you. Harry, my man, how's it going?
Oh, man, what is going on? Dude, I don't know where that script comes from, but it's pretty funny.
I just made it up.
I know that you wrote that out for hours and hours, but get your ass into the tribe, man. That's money.
Get your ass into the tribe.
And we just made up the tribe. So we have a tribe. Yes. There's three of us in it. And I
there
think
are
we're
three asses
in
the
too.
Tribe currently.
So without further ado, we have the world-renowned Rob Napoli. Is that how you say your name, Rob?
Yeah, that is correct, Napoli.
All right, good deal. So Rob is a superstar sales trainer, entrepreneur, coach, semi-pro football player. He's made it from the Midwest to New York City through Milan, Italy. So there's no story there. And what I love about Rob is that he has got a very unique perspective on sales organizations and marketing, not only from the US, but also from Europe. So we had a great conversation about that, and I'm really looking forward to today's with Eric, who is the ass in the tribe man, and we are going to have some fun. So Rob, tell us, what is going on in your world? Where are you, and what's been happening lately?
Yeah. Well, one, thanks for being here. Loving the energy in Eric's intro with the tribe, and happy to be a part of the tribe. You know, woo-hoo. I'm located actually now in Brooklyn, New York, out over here in Crown Heights. A lot's been going on actually. I run two different businesses. So I have one company called Hapday Group, which is a US sales go-to-market entry company. So we help companies come into the market. We stand up sales teams, outsource sales teams. We got a team down in Mexico that we can do everything from market research through account executive and helping getting companies scaled up. And then I have my other business, Rise Up Coaching, which is my entrepreneurship and innovation training, coaching, and development. And under that kind of falls into like sales and go to market and then future of work. So a lot of stuff going on. What's kind of nice is that the summer's been a little bit laid back at the fact that I've got a book coming out here in November in the fall. So finishing that up right now and getting that out for editing and into production here in the fall. So it's been a
awesome,
crazy summer.
And a podcast too, right? Awesome. Did I read that right?
Yeah. I also have a podcast called The Bare Necessities of Entrepreneurship, which I launched at the end of May, interviewing entrepreneurs about their journey. So it's you know, there's a tons of podcasts out there about startups and like their startup journey. And it's usually, hey, here's our one major challenge that we overcame, and this is what our business model is. And it's like, fuck all that. Like, entrepreneurship is hard. Like, let's talk about the real journeys of entrepreneurs that are doing things today and also for tomorrow. So talk with just great entrepreneurs about their journey into entrepreneurship and what that means, and less about like what the company is doing. Because I really want to hone in on what is the entrepreneurial mindset, entrepreneurial spirit, and how to be a great entrepreneur moving forward.
Okay, so you're in Brooklyn right now.
Mm-hmm.
Do New Yorkers think you sound funny?
Great question. I don't know. I think everywhere I go, people think I sound funny because I moved. Well, it's funny. So I grew up in Missouri, right? And Missouri is too south to be north, too north to be south, depending on who you're asked. For the Midwest, we're not the Midwest. Very, you know, accent neutral. But when I was up in Iowa, people thought I was from the south. I'm like, I'm south of here, Missouri, not from the south. And of course, going to Europe, living in Italy, you know, everyone's like, oh, Rob, you've got an accent. And then moving back here, having lived in Italy, people are like, why do you speak weird? Well, I used to speak really slow so Italians can understand me. So my tone was different. And New Yorker like, okay, Rob, speed it up. So I think everywhere I sound funny, to be honest. I always have, you know, people thinking I'm from somewhere else.
That's funny. I just wanted to break that up a little bit. Cool. So you've been literally all over the world training teams, training entrepreneurs. What's your goal? Like when you reach out to somebody, what do they mainly hire you to do? What problem are you solving for them?
This is a great question. Usually, a lot of times it starts with sales. My background is sales and marketing. I've got a master's in multi-channel marketing. Usually it's somewhere around personal professional brand or scaling into a new market. How do you step into a new market and be known, especially from not in the US, right? When you're from Europe or other parts of the world, the US market is super competitive or egotistical. Everyone talks about themselves. How do you kind of break that up and come in? So that's usually the starting point. But I work with a lot of companies on go to market. So what are all the things you need? How do you come in and hire? What's that strategy going to look like? What or how do you need to change your messaging? What do you do with your sales cadence? What does your story fit in from you as a person to you as a professional brand? How do you come in and actually pitch your business against American companies? So a lot of different things, but usually starts on two places, either personal brand or sales. And then I come in and I kind of end up helping them through a lot of different stages of entrepreneurship because I've been there and done that. I brought a company to market from Italy when I was there.
Awesome. So what does it take? And it doesn't have to be like people from other countries coming in here. I'm sure similar principles could work for someone who doesn't have a personal brand yet. How do they get one? Like, what are the first 3 to 5 things they absolutely should do?
Great question. One is, you know, I talk about LinkedIn a lot, and I think, you know, both of you are on LinkedIn, have strong presences there, but wherever your customer is, that's where you should be, right? So that's Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, Clubhouse, Twitter, and one is build a profile. So what is your story? Who are you, right? What has led you to where you are today? You know, I always talk about having a great headline. First thing is people should be able to see that headline and understand what you do, right? And have some personality to that. And then the third is engage. We don't need more influencers. We don't need more influencers. We need people being more intentional, authentic. And to start, don't start just creating content, especially if you're not ready for it, but go engage. Engage in conversation with your prospects, with your customers, with people that you want to be your customers. Learn from them, discuss, and have conversations. That's where all the magic starts from a personal brand perspective of, you know, it's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. And so are you engaging that conversation that people are wanting to understand who you are and what you can do for them?
Go ahead, Harry, sorry.
Yeah, I think we're asking the same question.
Yeah.
It's really about engagement, because a lot of people that I speak to seem to like and observe, but they're not really engaged. So could you help us to understand what the word engage means here?
Great question. Dialogue, a comment, not just, hey, awesome, congrats, not just liking it. It's actually, hey, Harry, love that post. In fact, my key takeaways were X, Y, Z. What do you think about this? Right? And considering yourself and starting a conversation based off content and something somebody posted, because that actually shows that one, you're knowledgeable, two, you understand. And you know, there's a saying, content creates credibility, right? And so if we want to be credible and you want to be seen as somebody that understands or knows what we're talking about, you got to create content. It doesn't mean, you know, go out and be an influencer and create 50 videos. Engage, ask questions, have a dialogue. The chat comment section is where it's at. And that usually turns into a direct message. Maybe you comment, ask a question, and you get a direct message and you set up a call and you meet somebody new that drives and opens doors. So that's what I mean by engage.
Yeah, Eric and I, we're
not engaged.
Engaging. We're working on getting engaged more on LinkedIn. So we've been struggling. No, Eric's really good at it. I've started a few videos in the past. So, Eric, what's your thought on this engagement? Are we figuring this out? Are we doing it right? Or do we need some coaching from Rob here?
Well, I think coaching is always awesome because you can't see the picture when you're inside the frame. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a coach, so I love coaches. Like, I just love getting coaching because it's always some kind of an aha moment that I didn't see. But my question is, like, a lot of the people that I would go after aren't on LinkedIn, right? The CEOs of you know, 35 person to 200 employee companies, they're not really on LinkedIn. So they're not, a lot of them are not, you know, putting out posts or commenting on posts. A lot are, but a lot aren't. So in the cases where they're not found very active on LinkedIn, how do you like, are there certain things you can do to get them to see you as an expert in the field?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because, you know, a lot of companies that are 35 to 200, you know, depending on, there's 620 million people on LinkedIn, so you can find a lot. And so maybe that CEO is not on LinkedIn, but 10 people from their company are, and they're very active in creating content. So you can leverage what the company is doing and the others that are on to start creating connection paths and dialogues. So Harry might be the CEO, but, you know, Harry is not active or not on it. But Eric, you're the, you know, VP of operations, and you're very close to Harry and you're active. I might get to know you a little bit and then learn about that through that way. So that Harry's like, hey, Eric, do you know who Rob is? Yeah, actually, blah, blah, connected. Dude, super smart. We should look at bringing him in. So you kind of create those connection pathways as one way to do it. In fact, wherever they are, you can be. And, you know, I kind of push back that there's a lot of CEOs that, oh, I don't need to be on social. But two of the biggest CEOs in the world are on social and almost broke Clubhouse, and Gary Vee and more so Elon Musk. And my question, you know, the question that I get asked, like, I'm a CEO of a big company or whatever, well, I should be on it. Why is Elon Musk on Clubhouse? He almost broke Clubhouse. 20,000 people joined his room to hear him talk. Why do you think he's on Clubhouse? You think he needs to be on Clubhouse? No.
Why do you think he's on Clubhouse?
By being there and engaging those conversation, now is he creating brand loyalty for people who may buy a Tesla later. But the future of work, this millennial Gen Z talent that is going to be coming out of school, that are going to be the next forward thinkers, where do you think they're going to want to work, or who are they going to want to work for? Right? Like, why do you think top talent goes to a company? Not because the company is great, because the leader's great, because they can go make real change and impact. And that's what millennial and Gen Z want. And so I challenge any leaders out there, there's like, how do we get more talent and diversity of thought and experience into our team? Start having a brand, start connecting. People want to work where they feel that they can make an impact. And people work for people, not brands. And that's my biggest pushback. And that's a lot of things that I talk with CEOs and leaders and entrepreneurs that are growing and scaling. Cause some of the companies I work for out of Europe are doing 5-10 mil. It's like, hey, you need to come and start creating a presence in the US so you can be seen as credible. What you've done in the US is great, Europe is great, but you got to come and kind of build that credibility here that you can hack it in this competitive market.
I heard you're the one that got Ferrari to come over here. Yeah.
I wish.
Was it Lamborghini?
You know, it's the other company called Rob's Motors, actually.
Rob's Motors. All right, we'll take it. Dude, you said something really cool right now. And I think if you don't pay attention to what you said, it could literally fly by because it was so subtle. You said people want to work for somebody who's making an impact. Mm-hmm. That's huge. I mean, that's huge. So many companies, like, you don't know their why, right? I mean, does this all stem back to Simon Sinek's why? Start with why?
Yeah, you know, from a brand perspective, absolutely. And, you know, you think about what millennials and Jesus, millennials is the group of people that start asking why to everything. Why? Why do we do this? Right? Why are we doing this tradition? Why are we doing this process? Why are we? Because that's the way it is. Who cares? Let's learn. That's different. And Gen Z is like, they came up with a cell phone in their hand. They can find information about anything, right? And so they want to go make that impact. They want to work for a company that has a why and for people that have a why. Because sometimes brands don't, or if they do, it's really hard in a big brand. So you want to find somebody that's going to help 10X the impact. from a person and a leadership standpoint.
I think somebody else is using 10x. Harry and I are a little above that. We were doing 11x nowadays. We're
definitely,
we were at 10.5x, but 11x now.
And it's trademarked.
It's trademarked. 11x.
I love it. I love that.
It was my idea.
It's like in the tribe, though.
Yeah. Rob, hey, yeah, okay. That's another reason you got to get your asses into that Facebook tribe. Rob, let me ask you this. Can you give me I know I'm putting you on the spot because I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this and I didn't know until now, but do you have an example of a company that has a strong why and is doing well versus one that doesn't have a strong why that you can kind of paint the picture for us?
And the second one may remain nameless.
No.
unless, yeah, okay. Eric wants to.
I'll say that there is an organization that I'm working with that has a very strong why and actually brought him on my podcast, founded by the name of Case Zorha. The company is called Omniboost, and they are a financial tech accounting software, and they support the hospitality industry. During the pandemic, hospitality shut down, and they could have easily, faltered, but instead they went and created more relationships, checking in. It's like, hey, you still have to figure out how to do these different things with your books, with finance, with all these things. And so they created all these plugins and just kept creating great conversations. And why this comes about is because Case's belief is there's a difference between serving and being willing to serve. Right? And you have to be willing to serve in all aspects of your life. And like, he instills that to the company. And that allowed them to actually, they grew during the pandemic. Being a fintech tool for the hospitality industry, and because of that, why they created so many different partnerships, they grew, they ended up teaming up and doing some awesome stuff, and then have since launched and are about to launch in new markets. They recently just about to launch in the US, hired the first US hire. They're gonna be launching in Singapore and Dubai as well by the end of 2021 and early 2022. And having that strong why of like willingness to serve the customers that they had, they didn't lose a lot. They put some on pause, but they didn't lose a lot of their customers. They were able to mitigate churn and just be really impactful in supporting those organizations and allowed them to see growth throughout, one of the hardest times for that industry. And, I'm not going to give any specific example, but there's plenty of examples of companies out there that did not have strong whys, that built products that were accessory, not necessary. What we saw through the big boom of things, in 2018, 19, and early 2020, before all this stuff happened, was that companies were basically just layering on top of each other. So it's like, your product works great. Well, we'll do one step further. So our product helps on this specific thing to go even faster. And so next thing you know, companies have 20 different tech stacks all built on top of each other to do process. Pandemic hits, well, what is accessory and what is necessary? I only need four different pieces of technology in my business. All these other things are nice to have. Rip.
Yep.
And so when you build a company that's on accessory and you don't have a strong why to pivot and create or grow and build, a lot of companies just couldn't make it out because they didn't know what to fall back on because their business was built on that. And I have had experience myself on building a business out of demand for the market versus building a business you care about. Talk to an entrepreneur that's built a business out of demand and see if they're still loving what they're doing 10 years later. Most likely they end up selling it in five because, the market demanded it, but that's not what they want to be doing. And so there's so many examples of, you don't have a strong why and you're doing something because a need or because it's a nice to have. Those are the ones that really fall apart and don't scale.
So having a why and having that internal drive is one thing, but being able to articulate it and make your clients and employees and people around you feel it, that's a whole different skill set. Mm-hmm. How do they do that? Like, how do you kind of exude your why to the market?
It's a great question. And it's not through anything you're going to do on the brand, the company website, or, the brand's Instagram page, right? It's done through your people. It's done through them being authentically and intentionally themselves and living out that. buddy of mine, Brian Burkhart, has a book called Stand for Something. It's always about like starting with your core beliefs. And when companies do that and they pass it on to their employees take that in their personal brand to the market and they talk about it and they share that. And so it exudes that to your customers. If you've got five salespeople, you know, living that brand, living that why, and being bought in and super energetic, they're going to draw in the right customers that are going to have long LTV with the brand because of the people.
And okay, but let me, I'm going to challenge that, right? Like, how do you get the salespeople to feel your brand or feel your why?
Well, you got to train them. You got to bring them into the organization, give them training, give them support, give them coaching, give them a seat at the table where they feel like there's an impact. Well, Rob, we don't want to give a seat at the table to a, you know, 2-month SDR. Yeah, well, you don't have to give them a seat at the big table, but a seat at the table to make their impact. Hey, what are you seeing? You're talking to our customers. What do you need to be successful? And when you bring in and you really onboard, and it comes down to how you recruit people in, right? Your brand starts from the minute somebody interacts with your brand and wants to come work for you, to how you onboard, to how you treat them once they're there. And if you do that well, you'll have employees that come in and work for you because they're bought in. When an employee takes less money to go work for a company because they believe in the company and they believe that's where you're going to have the best support, that's when you know you've got people who are going to go out and really exude that brand. And not everyone's like that, right? As a company, you're not going to be able to find everyone like that. But if you can find 2 or 3 of those, mm-hmm. 4 of those out of the 50 people you have, like that's going to help you scale. Yeah, but it starts from the top. It's got to start from the top, which is why I think CEOs and executives should care about their personal brand and let that work down and share that with the world. But not, they don't need to be influencers. Like my big thing is don't be an influencer. Be intentionally authentic in the way you interact in the world around you on social in real life. You know, we talk about social because we've been cooped up for a year. We had to learn how to be authentically and create connections through a Zoom call and on LinkedIn. And so that's why I think it's so important to build this idea of a personal brand, this authentic, I call it the social soul, right? You got to be humanly you, authentically you in everything you do online.
Can I ask a question here regarding your experience in Italy? What did you learn from that experience that you feel like Americans should know, and vice versa? What are Americans doing that Europe should know?
Great question. So I got to spend 2 years in Milan. I got a master's degree. I got to work for a company and bring it to the US market. And one of the things that just impressed me about Europeans in general is that they are required to learn multiple languages, right? Mm. So they have their native language and they speak. We do that as like, it's a nice to have, like you might have to take a Spanish class, but no one ever keeps it. And to see how they can navigate culturally those interpersonal relationships because they are forced to do that from a young age. I think, you know, if I decide to ever have kids, like they're going to know multiple languages. Like I feel it's like, really, like I think that I wish I'd done that. And I work with global cultures, like it's amazing, but just like what they do and the way they look at languages and how they go about teaching that at an early age, I think Americans can learn a lot from that. In fact, we should be able to speak multiple languages based on like our geography and being a melting pot. So I think that's something that, you know, Americans could take away from what Europeans are doing when I was living there and what surprised and impressed me. And, you know, for you know, Europeans to understand about America is, yes, it's loud, but it's a competitive market. And, you know, everyone kind of talks about their brand and, you know, is super boisterous and there's a negative connotation to that. But there's so much that the world is big, but it's smaller than you think. And if you're not putting yourself out there and creating those global connections and really talking, engaging, you're missing out on so much opportunity. And I feel like a lot of times people in Europe don't want to do that because that's not part of who they are. And so they just miss out on opportunity and they want to try to grow and scale. And they're like, how do I do this? And it's like, just put yourself out there a little bit. Lean into the fear, into the stigma of, hey, don't, you know, share your life on social and, you know, engage and be more active, especially as it relates to your personal brand.
Great.
Also, they ride bikes a lot. Yeah, and that's why they can be Italians eating pasta and cheese and all that stuff and still be skinny.
Well, that yeah, no, the fact that their food doesn't have a ton of hormones in it.
Oh, maybe that's it too. Okay, let's get back on track here.
Yeah, I had to think through that one. So as far as the European market is concerned, are people like not as competitive? I mean, I'm thinking everyone's competitive.
Yeah.
In business. But I mean, is it our market? Is the US just absurdly competitive and the rest of the world isn't, or much of Europe isn't? I mean, what was your experience on that?
I mean, everyone in business is competitive to an extent, right? But not like it is here.
Wow.
Because of a couple of different things. One, the US market's so big, right? Because we have 50 states that you can sell into, it's in the amount of people and landmass is huge. Germany, Belgium, right? Small. So you have, depending if you're going country, if you're going into the whole Eurozone, like in the cultures there. And so it's a little bit harder to go at scale because not every country speaks the same language. And so you're dealing with a little bit different stuff there.
Okay.
Two, we just have more competition. We have more companies competing for that market space than over there. And so, you know, I always get a kick out of when I see startup pitches and like, oh, here's our competition slide. It's like three competitors and we're very different. I'm just like, bullshit. Like, there's at least 20. If you don't show me at least 20 competitors and actually acknowledge that you have that many competitors coming into this new market, then I don't want to hear it. Cause you're not looking in the mirror and realizing what you're stepping into. And therefore you're going to have a reality check. So that's why I think everything just happens at a different speed here that allows for that. And then because a little bit too of GDPR that they have to, you know, their rules and restrictions to ours, so much more can be said and happen. You have to kind of weave through the shit a little bit more to find what's real and what's not. Whereas over there, it's like, there's not a lot of bullshit that you have to weave through because they can't do the same things the way that marketing and brand and reach outs can happen here. So there's a few things there that just kind of slow it down, which is actually why it's such a hard transition. Like if you email a prospect and say Italy or Germany or Turkey, like more than three times, they're going to be like, Eric, you're crazy. Stop talking to me. And if they see you on the street, they're going to like walk away. Here, it's like, I can email Eric, you know, 14 times and call him and text him and then like run into him on the street. And he'd be like, Rob, I know I owe you a call back. Like keep pinging me. I'll get back to you. I promise. Like, it's okay. Like we're okay getting hit with that many messages. And like, they're like, that's crazy. Why would I ever send somebody more than three messages? Or if they go through a cadence, it's like, oh, well, they don't want to work with me. And like, fine, screw them. We're not going to keep nurturing them. It's like, wait a second. They didn't even open the email. Like, they need to be re-engaged. Like, there's 50 people here that didn't even open your email. I have no idea what you do. You can't just say they don't like you. So screw them. Like, you gotta, you know, so those are some of the things that make us so much more competitive. And some of the things that you have to train them as they're coming to the new market and what makes the US market so unique, but also a big lift.
And why'd you come back?
My wife got a job here. So when we were over there, my wife is an interior designer for a famous Italian architect design firm. And they said, hey, we got enough people in Milan, but you're American. We need people in our US office. You understand our style, but you also bring a new flair. We're sending you to New York. And so that's why I came here. Plus, I mean, it was perfect because my company would have kept me in Italy, but we also got accepted to an accelerator in New York. And so since Christina's moving live, I was like, I'll move there and I'll run the accelerator program. So I got to have that amazing experience, which opened up a lot of doors. So, you know, I went to Italy because of my wife and then moved to New York because of her. And, you know, been here for almost 6 years now.
Very cool. So what's your sales process like, Rob?
Very multifaceted. You know, I mostly, a lot of it's LinkedIn and through that and driving kind of conversations from there first and following up. But I mean, I have a whole process of, you know, email and email to LinkedIn, link to email. So it just kind of depends on what we're doing, what I'm looking to grow and go out and get, right? So if I'm looking at connections, it's usually a lot more LinkedIn heavy for coaching and things like that versus, you know, speaking engagements, podcasts, et cetera. It's much more email first, followed up by LinkedIn and kind of running a full kind of multi-touch approach. So my process varies from different, but it's fully multi-channel. I mean, I went to school to get a degree in multi-channel marketing. I love the idea of understanding the different platforms and touch points. And I've got different, you know, I've got different processes. I've got people on Instagram that follow me and the way I do reels. I've got a TikTok community that I'm a part of, and then Clubhouse that I'm engaged in, and LinkedIn. So it's all a bit different depending on what my goals and objectives are and how to drive business back.
Very cool. So talk to us about how you break your day down, man, because like how, you know, as an entrepreneur and most entrepreneurs we talk to, it's like, I don't have time for all that. Like where, right. How do you stay consistent and omnipresent across all those channels?
Really great question. I actually have an amazing content VA that joined my team. And so what we do is we batch it. So what I'll do is I'll take like a theme of the week and a couple of themes, and I'll create multiple pieces of content or fit one piece of content we'll cut up and use. And then that becomes the theme. And then we create that as how for each platform, different messaging. So that allows us to free up time. I'm not sitting here thinking, oh, I need to create an Instagram reel today. What am I going to do? It's like, it's all kind of pre-planned out, but I have the fluidity if I want to.
But when do you plan it out?
When?
Yeah. Like what's your schedule like? Do you actually sit down with your VA and you plan out like how far in advance? What are you doing?
No more than 10 days. We have a ton of content that we can cut up and use if we need something, but we go about a week to 2 weeks out tops, and we meet weekly on that process specifically. And then we check in every day. And then I have a second VA who supports me with my scheduling, the podcast piece of it, all that stuff, helping keep my calendar straight. And so I do content, we sit down and approve it and plan it out, shoot it by the end of the week, usually on Friday afternoons. I don't work and schedule meetings past 2 o'clock on Friday. For afternoons, usually content creation day. I make up those hours on Sunday morning because I prep for the week, shoot that content over the weekend. It gets all cut up and uploaded on Monday, Tuesday, and then scheduled out. So we're pushing a week out. And then the rest of the stuff that we do, my mornings from usually 7 to about noon, 1 o'clock is reserved for European business. And then the afternoon is all my US business stuff. And so I'm very intentional about who I schedule in, meeting times, et cetera, based on what part of the country. And I do trainings and training blocks. Usually I only do training, especially the corporate training I do on Tuesday, Thursdays. All the accelerator, I work for 12 different accelerators as a coach, entrepreneur, resident, speaker, mentor. Usually those are on Wednesdays or Fridays. So I just kind of have set days that the podcast recordings are always Monday or Fridays. And so I just set it up so that I know when to expect it. And then I manage my calendar on that so that I can be super effective and present everywhere and not feel like I'm running the hamster wheel.
Now, did you feel like you were running a hamster wheel when you came up with this system, or did you know you always had to even start with the system?
That's a great question. When I first got into sales, when I felt like I was running a hamster wheel, and because I did account-based selling into Fortune 500, Forbes 100 companies early, I was selling into Nationwide, Wells Fargo, Principal. I had to learn how to do account-based selling and keep track of 50 different hiring managers at all times. And I have ADHD and OCD. So I had to be, I realized pretty quickly that I had to start developing some sort of color coding system and things like that. And then I just evolved it over time and gone through ebbs and flows of what works and what doesn't. And I've gotten really good at slowly kind of managing that. Everything I do is color coded. So if you look at my calendar, it's all color coded. My notes, all color coded. I have color coded sticky notes so that I can, you know, my brain can react and recall all of it. So I learned pretty quickly through sales that if you don't have a system, it's really easy to just fall on your face.
Yeah. What do you think of that, Harry?
Yeah, I think that's really, I look at you listening to you, you sound so dang organized. And then what you just said about the ADHD and most people who are anywhere near ADHD, if I can say that, ADHD, typically are all over the map. And, you know, it's a real challenge. So just touching on that briefly, I mean, how did you go from that to saying, I need to be organized? Was there someone that was instrumental in helping you on that? Because trying to get some salespeople to migrate into from completely disorganized to a little bit of organization has been a real challenge.
So there's a couple of different things that help really shape this. one being my wife. She is very focused all the time and very task and goal oriented. So being around her has helped. That was a big thing. When I moved to New York, and after I left that startup, I went to a large global corporate where I was managing a team, a quota, and way too many KPIs. And I realized really quickly, and I actually overstructured my day because I felt like I needed to, otherwise I'd get lost. And I had an amazing managing director who was like, Rob, when do you have time to take a piss? And I was like, I don't. And so he helped me kind of like scale that back a little bit. But it's been a battle and still is a battle. And it wasn't till I actually kind of said to myself and really looked at, Rob, what do you want to be known for and what do you want to do? Because I take on too much. I still do this. Like, in fact, I had to have this conversation the other day with my team because we've got a book coming out that needs to get into editing on September 10th, and I'm just finishing it up. So that's like high priority. I'm launching group coaching sessions, which I was going to launch next week, but I can't do that and get the book with the podcast plus the current workload I have. And I've got another project kicking off in November. And I had to sit back and said, Rob, you can't say yes to all this and expect to get it done. And when I kind of have that conversation myself on a regular basis, I kind of realign my organizational skills. What am I focused on? What's the impact? What needs to get done? And then I kind of align my whole vision and goals. And so I kind of get through these cycles of it. And I think it was last week, actually on Friday, I woke up and I realized I didn't have it. I mean, I didn't have it at all. And I was like, fuck it. And I went to the gym and I was there for the first time in a long time, a 2-hour workout session, just completely reset, reloaded. I put a TikTok and an Instagram reel out about it because sometimes you just have those days. And I continually go through the cycle. And so, you know, you need to reset. And when I reset and have those conversations with myself, it goes back to, okay, what are the short-term things that need to get done with the long-term? And I like to think of them as systems and process, you know, being diligent to the process instead of having like these big lofty goals. Like, what are the things in the process that need to get done? What are those check markers, right? The book, these are the clear check markers to get the book done and off the plate so I could put something new on the plate. And so visually I have to do that. And I have to realign that on a probably bi-weekly basis because I get overwhelmed and lost in the sauce. So it's a constant battle I fight to keep organized. But I know that if I don't do that and use colors to coordinate, I will easily get sucked into playing video games or watching a show for 8 hours and being like, what the hell just happened?
Mm. Yeah.
What's your Instagram handle?
It's Rise Up Rob Knapp. So it's rise_up.robknapp.
Rob Knapp. Yeah, I've got you.
And I'll make sure to drop a beacon, my beacons page, which has all my contact info, email, all my platforms where you can find me on podcast, all that good stuff. I have a new website actually coming out too, which is another big thing on my plate that I'm working on. You know, so it's like, you know, it's a bit crazy on how to manage all that. And it's one that I think a lot of people, not just entrepreneurs, I think everyone struggles with it. And there's a lot of hacks and mindset. And it's like, you know, to be successful, you have to get up at 6 and go to the gym and do mindfulness and practice. Whatever the fuck works for you, works for you. Find what works for you and gets you in a state of flow and energy. And if that's one of those processes, awesome. But also, you don't have to do that process if that doesn't work for you. Like people that are creative at night and work from 2 to midnight, that's amazing. Find a company that allows you to do that because that's when you're most productive. You don't have to be an 8 to 5 or 9 to 6, like whatever that is for you. You need to find that. And it's a constant exploration. It's never going to be perfect. And as long as you understand it's a journey and you continue to commit to those task management or whatever you want to use, then that's how I help.
I got to hop in here as a coach because the first thing you got to understand is that most people try to change their habits and their activities and restructure and do all that. But the problem may be a little bit deeper. It might be a self-image problem. It might be the fact that you have an idea of who you want to be. You have an idea of what you want to do, but you don't believe that you are the type of person that can ever achieve that. And so what we tend to do is like, oh, well, yeah, it's a messed up morning routine. If I just wake up earlier, if I just do this, because Eric Thomas wakes up at 3 a.m. now and he's successful. Well, he's successful because he, you know, he knew what he wanted to do. He's got a why. He went from homeless to millionaire. And I'm not, you know, not to promote Eric Thomas for no apparent reason, but he's just an awesome dude.
Yeah.
He's got that why, and he doesn't have a self. Like when he was homeless, he wasn't doing that. He wasn't waking up, right? So you need to understand, I think, if you're thinking about changing up your tasks or you're thinking about changing up your daily routines, really take a step back and think about who it is that you want to be and how these routines and what is truly stopping you, right? It's not your routine. A better routine could probably help, but that's not what's stopping you if you're being honest with yourself, right? So yeah, get clear, call me or call Rob, but call me first because I'm like 11X and he's 10X and we'll help you get there. No, I'm kidding. No, get a coach to help you think through it.
Absolutely. And like, this is, you know, I was on another podcast with Amy Horvath who talked about this. It's like a lot of times the problem that we identify is not the root cause. And
Amy who?
Amy Horvath.
I was just on her show two weeks ago.
Yeah, she's amazing, right?
She's awesome, man. She's in New York too.
Yeah, she is. So Revenue Real Hotline. So we were talking about this, that we're talking about problems. And she was like, I can't remember, it was like the Google methodology or whatever. It's like, it's either a process, the human or something else. And most of the time, there's always a different root problem. And that's what I love like working with entrepreneurs about is like, actually, let's talk about your plan and where does that stem from? And, you know, as a coach, I have a coach too. Like coaches need coaches too, because you got so much in my brain. I need to be able to talk it out with somebody. And I have a few people that I talk it out with that help kind of align me. And other ones that kind of be like, okay, Rob, your plate's getting too full. You're getting lost in the sauce again. Like, let's realign, because you know where your problem of you is, because you're a people pleaser. And that's the thing you don't want to be. You got to be able to say no. And so it's able to like reset. And so, you know, sometimes you just also need to fucking talk it out. Say what's on your mind, say your piece, get it out. We hold so much in, get it out of your body. Even if that's just speaking it into existence by yourself, say it out loud, get it out of your body. Let your body release it so that you can focus on the things that you need to focus on to grow. And I think so many of us are afraid to like release that out of us. And we just hold on to stuff and we compounded and buried deep and then put other problems on top. And so our fixes are never getting down to the core, as you said. And so that's why I'm a big proponent as well. If you got struggles, call Eric, you know, call me. Like, this is what we do for a living and what we love to help others get through and work through.
For sure. For sure. Harry, you got anything to add or ask?
Yeah. I'm glad the conversation went down this path. This has been great. And we really appreciate your genuineness, authenticity, if you like, but we really appreciate you being honest with us and sharing that. It's very informative and helpful for all three of our listeners in Latvia.
Yeah. Who's your book editor, by the way?
I don't remember her name. I can't remember her name.
Okay. Well, we got a few who you won't forget their name if you really need a book editor. Just let us know. We're connected to a few awesome people.
I just know that I have a hard date that I got to get this done by. So
good luck with that.
Let us know when the book is out and we'll bring you back. Talk to us about the book.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got a standing invitation. I think Harry would agree. Yeah, Harry?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great.
Awesome. Love to hear it. It's going to be out in November for sure. I already know that it's coming out in November, and I have a pre-sign up coming out on September 10th on my website. The new website is going to drop on September 10th. I'll give you that.
Can you imagine knowing when your new website's coming out, Harry?
I
need some color-coded post-its.
If there's one thing that I actually kind of am good at with myself sometimes, is like I pick a date and I need to stick to it. And I make my partners stick to dates that we can get it, because everything gets planned out of that. Because if not, like, it literally takes me a whole day of a mental reset to like come to terms that didn't happen and that's okay. But knowing me, I gotta reset and reload. The Social Soul drops in November, so I'd love to come back and talk more about it. And
awesome.
Yeah, share more for
we'd love
guys.
To have you back. Awesome. Absolutely. Rob,
great.
Thanks, man. Hey, have an awesome day. Thanks a lot, Rob. Really appreciate Absolutely. Your time with us.
Eric, Harry, take care. Appreciate being a part of the tribe and all your listeners in Latvia and Australia and all those things. And hopefully get some more. I've got my podcast. I think we're at like 34 countries now. So I'll try to drive some of them and get you some
nice
some folks in other parts of the world. We'll make it happen.
Right, that's what's up. We appreciate it. How do you say goodbye in Italian?
Ciao. Ciao. Arrivederci. Yeah.
Ciao. Arrivederci.
From here to there, you're gonna grow because you've listened to our show. If you like our podcast vibe, don't be a stranger. Hit subscribe. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to join the B2B Sales Secrets Facebook group, and we'll see you on the next episode.